Jenna, David. Observe the birds of the sky, for they do not sow, neither do they harvest, nor gather into barns, and yet your Father in heaven feeds them. Are you not as important as they? Who is among you who by worrying can add one cubit to his stature? Why do you worry about clothing? Observe the wild flowers, how they grow. They do not get tired out, nor do they spin. But I will say to you that not even Solomon with all of his glory was arrayed like one of them. Therefore, do not worry or say, what will we eat, or what will we drink, or with what will we be clothed? For worldly people seek after all these things. Your Father in heaven knows that all of these things are also necessary for you. But seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. Well, good morning. Welcome, and thank you for coming out on this Super Bowl Sunday. The passage that I just read is interesting from a number of different perspectives. First of all, it appears in Matthew, Luke, and Thomas, which is indicative of the fact that it was probably copied from the Q Gospel. That is to say, we know that Matthew and Luke copied about two-thirds of their Gospels from somewhere else, either from Mark or from the unfound Q Gospel. So we think this came from the Q Gospel. But more importantly, it appears in Thomas. And in the five Gospels, the Jesus seminar, this is one of the few that's in red or pink, the entire thing. And it's what that means is that this collection of over 200 biblical scholars agree almost unanimously that this is something that Jesus actually said. So what does he mean by that? And where are we going with that? Today we're going to talk about abundance and prosperity. I'm first going to try to define abundance. Then I'm going to look at the concept that abundance is our nature. It's part of who we are. And then I'm going to ask the really important question is if we are abundant, if abundance is part of our nature, then why aren't we all rich? But first I'm going to back up. The opening reading that I was going to do this week was actually from Deuteronomy. And it's a great quote, and I've used it here a number of times. And it centers around the gates of heaven, and the storehouses of God will be opened and will pour you out a blessing. And it's a beautiful passage, and I thought, how appropriate for that. But in school, Dr. Roger Teal taught us to always read through the whole thing. Don't just take a snippet because it sounds good. So I went back and I started reading Deuteronomy. Oh my. Whoa. I honor the Hebrew scriptures and we honor all paths, including Jewish and everything else. But let me tell you, that section of Deuteronomy is all about conditions. And essentially is what it says is if you honor the Hebrew God, then the gates of heaven will be opened up to you and it will pour you out a blessing. And it goes on to say, but if you do not, oh boy, the afflictions that you're going to get, not the least of which is hemorrhoids. Right there in Deuteronomy is what it says. So we certainly don't want to risk anyone in here with that affliction. So we've moved over, and today we're going to talk about that beautiful quote from Matthew. So what is abundance? What do I mean by abundance? I looked in dictionary.com, and it is a very large quantity of something. Well, I thought that was kind of a shallow definition. I looked a little deeper, and Merriam-Webster gives what I think is a better definition. It says, a relative degree of plentifulness. And it's a relative degree of plentifulness. Well, relative to what is a good question. So for this, we turn to our Buddhist friends, and we look at it from a Buddhist perspective. This month, our youth are going to be talking about Buddhism and how that, you know, affects their lives and what they are, and giving them a little bit different perspective. So I thought it might be good for us to look at the Buddhist perspective of abundance and prosperity. And we've talked before about the Four Noble Truths. And the first one is that life is suffering. Second is that suffering is caused by attachment. The third is that the cessation of suffering is possible. And then the fourth one is that this cessation of suffering can come through the Eightfold Path. But I want to go back to that second noble truth, that suffering is caused by attachment. It is attachment to material things, attachment to having the fanciest, newest car. It is attachment to money. It is attachment to having the biggest house, but also to other things. Attachment to glory, attachment to fame and honor that can be equally causing suffering. It's when we are attached to those things. We're going to talk a little bit more about that later, but it is the attachment that is the cause of suffering in the Buddhist tradition. But also within the Buddhist tradition, there's another thing that our kids are going to be talking about today. They're going to be looking at and learning the life of the Buddha, who was born Siddhartha Gautama. He was a very, very wealthy prince. His father was king. He had a lot of money. They had a lot of everything. They had a beautiful palace. But as the Buddha, or Siddhartha at that time, grew older, he became aware that there is suffering in the world, that people get sick, that people die, that people have less than joyous, wonderful lives. And he felt that he wanted to experience that, but his father did not want him to do that. So he kept him in the palace and surrounded him with all of the things that a young man would want. Beautiful girls, the best wines, the feast after feast. He had all of the things that he'd ever want, so he would never leave. But Siddhartha left anyway. And he went out into the world, and he experienced sickness and death and all of the other things of the human condition. He followed the path of self-denial and asceticism. At one point in time, he existed on one grain of rice a day for his total sustenance. He sat beneath the Bodhi tree and became enlightened. And that is when he became the Buddha. But part of that was his discovery of the middle way, that we don't have to live lives of luxury and opulence, nor do we have to follow the path of asceticism where we deny ourselves everything, that there is a middle way that we can go. And it's in that middle way that we can find true abundance. So let's look at this idea of abundance is our natural state. The creation is a reflection of the creator. Now, I don't know art or paintings, but I know that Monet has his style, Rembrandt has his style, Van Gogh has his style. They are not the same. They are all beautiful in their own way, but they are all different, and each one is a reflection of the creator. Well, that divine creative force of the universe, which we can call God, we can call it Yahweh, there are many, many different names we can ascribe to it, but that thing, whatever it is, that infinite intelligence that has created all that is, also is reflected in its creation. It is reflected in all of its creation. It is reflected in us. We are reflections of that divine nature, just as a Monet painting is reflective of the artist Monet. But, and we can get this idea of abundance out of that by simply looking at things like the stars. Who has not laid on the snow on a crisp Alaskan night and looked up at the heavens and seen that array of stars? It's more than you could possibly count. It'd be like trying to count the grains of sand on a beach. And then when you realize that most of those aren't even stars, they're entire galaxies consisting of millions and millions of stars themselves. It's more than our brains can get wrapped around. The infinite abundance of the universe just looked in the stars. Another example that I use is fish. One year I was out fishing on the Alaska Peninsula and we're fishing for trout, but there were a lot of salmon in the river and, oh man, the salmon are all over the place. They were thick. And then a big school of salmon moved in. And there were so many salmon in this little stream that I was trying to fish in, they were bumping into each other and they'd actually come up and bump into your leg. I mean, so many salmon, and that is in one little tiny stream in Bristol Bay that feeds into a bigger river, that feeds into, and that's only one of the five major rivers that drain into Bristol Bay. When you think of the number of sockeye salmon that come back there, it's just almost hard for us to even believe that could be that many millions and billions of salmon in there. The trees. Think when we drive to Talkeetna to go to our cabin. We, you know, not long after we, you know, get out of Anchorage, you can see the beautiful trees, and it's just trees, birch and aspen, spruce, as far as you go, and you drive and drive and drive, and it's just trees all the way, an abundance of trees and plants and animals. And here's one for you, thoughts. How many thoughts have you had this morning? Well, I don't know, I've had a lot. Everything from the Super Bowl to, we've all had that many thoughts just this morning. How many thoughts are we going to have the rest of the day? And that's just you. What about everybody in this room? How many thoughts have we collectively had? And we look at that, the number of thoughts by the entire human population, it's a significant number, and it represents prosperity, it represents abundance, an abundance of thought. Well, if we are then reflections of our Creator, and that creative force, whatever it is a force of abundance, why aren't we all rich? Why aren't we all abundantly sourced in every way all the time? Well, I submit that we can be, but there are things that keep us from that, and we've talked about some of them before. Two, one is hidden beliefs, and the other is that prosperity is a state of mind. I'll go back and talk about hidden beliefs. We learn some things, some of us, when we were little that do not serve us well. I remember being taught when I was a very little boy that money is dirty. It had germs. You don't know where that thing's been. Boy, if you think that money is dirty, it's kind of hard to really get your arms around it and accept it. Another thing that many of us have been taught is that money is the root of all evil. That's not what Scripture says at all. Scripture says the love of money is the root of all evil. How similar is that to our Buddhist teachings, where we are being taught that it is the attachment to money, the attachment to these things that is the cause of suffering. Another famous one is about how, in fact, I have it here. It is easier for a camel to squeeze through a needle's eye than it is for a wealthy person to get into God's domain. I remember that as a little boy. Whoa. It's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than it is for a wealthy person to get into heaven. Boy, that sure doesn't want to make you be a wealthy person, does it? Once again, though, we need to look at the context. Where does that come? How does that all fit together? And so if we read that entire passage, what really is going on there, Jesus is admonishing the Pharisees for their assertion that because they are wealthy, they are more likely to get into heaven. They have asserted that because they are wealthy, that is a sign that they are part of God's chosen. And since I've already been chosen by God, I am likely to get into heaven. And Jesus is saying, no, 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 no. Because of your beliefs, because of that, it is more likely for a camel to go through the eye of the needle than it is for the wealthy to get into heaven. Jesus never had a problem with somebody that was wealthy. Wealth is okay. It is the attachment to that wealth that causes the trouble. And then finally, the Midas touch. Midas was a Greek, and he was able to find and return to the god Bacchus, his tutor. And in return for this, Bacchus, who was a pretty good old boy, he was the god of wine, women, and song, I think. He granted Midas any wish that he wanted. And Midas says, well, I'd like to really be rich. I'd like to have, you know, a lot of gold and stuff. How about if everything that I touch will turn to gold? Bacchus says, you got it. So boom, everything that Midas touched turned into gold. That was great at first. He touched the branch of a tree. Poof, it's gold. You know, everything that he touched turned into gold. He was becoming phenomenally wealthy. And then he got hungry. And he thought he'd have something to eat. Well, he touched his plate. Whoop, he's got a golden plate. Touched his fork. It was a golden fork. I don't think they use fork. Well, he was going to have his chicken, and he touched his wing as he was getting ready to watch the Super Bowl, and all of a sudden he had a golden wing. Well, this wasn't working out so good. So he had to go back to Bacchus and beg him to take away that curse. And so Bacchus finally relented. So the Midas touch, no reflection on our neighbors, is not about all the wealth we can have. It's about what it can bring to us. The second thing that I'll talk about is prosperity is a state of mind. And I do have another Buddha quote. It was on our slide. Happiness does not depend on what you have or who you are. It solely relies on what you think. And the same can be said of abundance. Prosperity is a state of mind. When Ann and I came to Alaska, 1971, January, we had nothing. My net monthly take home was $148 a month. And at that time, the cheapest place you could live in Anchorage, Alaska was on Government Hill in Hollywood Vista. And a one-bedroom apartment in Hollywood Vista was $154 a month. And Ann was 8 months pregnant with David and couldn't work. Well, we got through those times. We recognized that we were for sure on the bottom rung of the socioeconomic ladder. But as the years went by, got a few raises, I got a few promotions, got a few more stripes, and moved up a little bit, but we were still the bottom rung of the socioeconomic ladder. But if we look back at it today, those were some of the best days in our lives. We had a beautiful baby boy, David. We had friends. We had enough. We didn't eat steak But we did have moose, we had caribou, we had salmon. We were abundantly supplied, not by the government, not by the United States Air Force. We were abundantly supplied by God. And it's all because it was our state of mind. And there's the flip side to that, is that if you believe that you do not have enough, you never will have enough. No matter how much you have, you can never have enough. And I've made references to before to some of the performers and some of these athletes that have, you know, millions and millions and millions of dollars, and yet it's never enough. They demand more. They can't ever have enough because they have a consciousness of lack. They have a consciousness that they can't have enough. And the universe is going to reply exactly with what they think. Ernest Holmes, life is a mirror and will reflect back to the thinker what he thinks into it. So if you believe that you don't have enough, you're never going to have enough. So if there is a takeaway today, the thing that I want everybody to carry away this day, it's that divine creative force of the universe, the infinite intelligence which made all that is expressing through and as each and every one of us. And if you put yourself in that entity's shoes, in that principle's shoes, if you will, would you choose to experience lack and limitation and not enoughness? Or would you choose your painting to be one of beauty, one of joy? Would you choose to come and experience enoughness? Doesn't mean we all have to be millionaires, but we can all have enough if we choose to allow the divine current to flow through us and allow the divine to provide for us. The song in the prelude songs, God Lives Through Me, Michael Gott. What a beautiful example. That divine essence, the infinite intelligence, does live through each and every one of us, and it wants to do so abundantly, prosperously, joyfully. And it's up to us to stand back and just let it go, let it be. So with those ideas in mind, I would like to invite my colleagues, the practitioners, to join me in recognizing that there is one power in the universe, one power, one presence, one life. That life is the life of God. That life is the life of each and every one of us. And at the heart of who we are, we reflect that divine life expressing through us. We reflect the qualities of the divine. We reflect abundance. We reflect prosperity. We reflect happiness and joy. And so for those of us this day that are feeling less than, that are feeling left out, that are feeling separated, not only from our fellow man, but from God, I just simply know the truth for this, each and every person who is feeling this separation, knowing that we cannot be separated, that we are one. We are one in every circumstance, now and forever. For every person that is feeling the appearance of dis-ease, any type of health issue, I just simply know that behind all it is that infinite intelligence expressing itself. It expressed itself through and made us in the beginning. It surely has the power to heal that which needs to be healed in this moment. And I call forth that healing. And lastly, I recognize that that power, that presence is within us as community. As we come together on this potluck Sunday, we come together in love and peace and joy. And so I just give thanks. I give thanks for this time that we've had together. I give thanks for my awareness of all of the health, all of the love, all of the prosperity, all of the abundance in this universe. Now I just release these words, the working of law. I let it go, I let it be, and so it is.